Welcome back to So Much Crime, So Little Time. On the last episode, we went back to 1971, to a farm town in County Meath, outside of Dublin, Ireland. Una Linsky, a 19-year-old, on her way home from work, disappeared, and the investigation was just starting.
In this episode, we're going back to Porterstown Lane to review the rest of the story. What happened to Una Linsky? How was the town torn apart? And how are we here, over 50 years later, still trying to find resolution?
On this episode of So Much Crime, So Little Time, we review the full third season of Inside the Crime from News Talk.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Dee. Before we start today's episode, we want to give a big warning. There will be spoilers in this for Inside the Crime Season 3, The Una Linsky Murder. If you are looking for an overview, check out our preview episode.
And speaking of spoilers, also in this episode, we're going to discuss, after we talk about Inside the Crime, this question: do you read the titles for later episodes on a true crime show?
Our thoughts and opinions on Inside the Crime Season 3. Let's recap on Una Linsky's murder and what plays out in its aftermath. Last time, we discussed Episode 1. It was all about Una Linsky and how she disappeared while walking home from a bus stop just a few hundred yards from her family's home.
So there are four more episodes, and they cover the Garda's investigation and brutal tactics in drawing out confessions. The three friends, Dick, Martin, and Marty, who get accused of the crime. There's the misplaced vengeance killing of Marty. Then, for most of the rest of the show, it focuses on Martin and his quest for redemption. By the end of the season, Martin is cleared and apologized to, but that takes over 40 years to happen. And we never really find out who killed Una Linsky. It is still an open case. All right, let's discuss. So, Dee, initial thoughts?
Well, my initial thoughts are I really enjoyed your attempt at saying Gardaí. Gardaí? but moving on from that and into the podcast, my initial thoughts were... So, having listened to episode one, I loved it. I really wanted to jump in to the rest of the podcast. I mentioned how much I loved the Irish setting, the Irish accents. I continued to love this podcast. I thought the pace was excellent and the setting was perfect. It painted a great picture of the evening in question. Well, I felt like it painted a very good picture because maybe because I'm from so close to where it happened. I don't know how you would have felt, Jeff, but I loved the podcast overall, but there was definitely elements that surprised me. And maybe I'm left wanting for some more elements that were not touched on at all in the podcast. So as much as I loved it, I felt like there's more there. There's more to the story that we haven't been able to explore yet.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Like, I think I really enjoyed it. I agree with you that the pacing was great. I liked that. You know, some shows, some podcasts, the episodes are like 45 minutes to an hour and they kind of drag, like they kind of just include everything. And I felt like this one was really good at keeping it moving along very quickly, right? Like, I think when you sometimes get surprised that the episode is over already, I think that's maybe a good thing. Mm-hmm. I did think, like, in episode, I think it was episode two, there was really almost nothing on Una, right? Like, we finished episode one, she's disappeared. We are starting the investigation, and then it's really just this hard pivot to Martin. And
yeah,
it really becomes like Martin's story for the whole rest of the season.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, part of me was wondering, like, does the title, like, Inside the Crime fit here? Is it not really Inside the Accused? Because Una gets lost, which I'm sure... wasn't the intent of the podcast to lose the victim in it all. And I understand that they were trying to show the victim of being a person of interest or being a wrongly accused person. But it just felt to me that she definitely got lost in it. And this pivot was more, it was more about Martin, more about the impact on his life, on his family, even as you said, as it moves on to 40 years later and him getting the apology and like the admission that he, like that his conviction was overturned, etc. It felt really like a stark pivot to episode one, where I was invested in this girl, this 19-year-old woman who just, with it seemingly so much evidence, so much there, like so much ability to catch the killer, like the person who actually killed them, and they got lost. But then maybe that was the point of it. Maybe the other aspect of it that is touched on so much in the podcast is the police, or the Gardaí, as we call them in Ireland, and maybe how like it was just lazy. They were lazy. They went after these three guys because they had the same car, seemingly. They tried to fit everything else in. And because of that lazy policing, they lost Una. They lost Una in the mix of it all. Like, her story got lost.
Yeah, I think that's right. So looking at my notes, so she gets found, a couple months after she disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
The show covers that in episode 3, right? So, and then her family, it's alluded to that her family moves away.
Yeah.
Right. And there's the focus on what her brothers do, right? Which we should talk about a little bit. But yeah, like I wonder how different it would have been if the first episode like presented it as a story about Martin.
Yeah.
Right. Like, here's a story about a guy who gets, you know, he's what, 20? He's not much older than she was, basically the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of gets caught up in this thing just because he's got these couple of friends. They happen to be in a car that's similar to the car that we think was involved in the crime, but we don't really know. Right. Like, that's kind of bizarre that there's this unusual looking car, which I think they allude to like in the last episode, that how many of these cars could there have been in this area at that time? How hard would it have been to find? Like, it seems like they could have tracked that down.
Well, and that's the thing about the Gardaí and their disregard for all of the witnesses and the evidence that pointed away from the men that were named as people of interest. And that was so frustrating. Like, and I can only imagine what the Linskys must think when they hear like that kind of thing, because like if they had just, the Gardaí were called in so quickly, so they had time on their side. And then also they had all of these witnesses from people who had like no agenda. Like Paul Regahan was Una Linsky's cousin, and he had a good look at the driver, and he noted that he was like a well-dressed man, like a middle-aged man. Like, if Dick Donnelly's working on a farm, he's not going by and well, like he's not well dressed, first of all, and he wasn't middle aged. And second of all, Paul Gahan would likely have known him or been able to identify if it was him. Like, so that is an eyewitness. And yet they use this weird evidence of these three lads saying, "Oh, I heard a car, it must be Dick Donnelly's," as like, and they use that in court, and that's what they use in order to like up their story. It's just so bizarre.
Right.
It's as if they didn't want to solve it. Because what was so interesting was like the whole like description of like, and the guards all like came into the farm, there was so many, then the murder squad were in. It's like everyone was taking this so seriously. But instead of taking it so seriously, they were like, let's get this wrapped up. Like, let's just get someone in.
Yeah, like to an extreme point where they're not just torturing these three guys, these three suspects, and trying to get them to make these false confessions, which they get. So two of the three make these false confessions. That ends up being the thing that makes the two go to prison or get convicted. But then we find out they also tortured the witnesses, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they made them change their stories. They made them give false statements. They pressured them to do the same in court. which, you know, in this I presumably small, close-knit community where these people all know each other, right? A lot of them are related to each other.
Yeah, and then there was the guy who Martin was sharing a flat with in Dublin. And, like, he was out, wasn't he sharing a flat with this guy? A roommate or something? And he said, oh, one night after a few drinks, Martin had a few drinks on him. And he said, Dick accidentally hit her with his car. And that is used in court. But apparently he was in the Garda station for 7 hours.
So is that... Okay. So I feel like there's certainly reputations in of the police and the way some of these investigations can go based on like who they're investigating in America. But like in Ireland, like, is this part of the reputation of the police?
I mean, I might be coming from a naive standpoint, but we were always, always raised to respect the Gardaí, and like, you know, they were always out like members of the community. They're literally just trying to make sure everything is fine. They don't have like the fear factor that they would have, I think, in parts of maybe America. They don't hold guns, just to note that for anyone who's unaware of that. They're unarmed. And I don't know, any I say run-ins as if I've had loads of run-ins with the guards, and I haven't. But any time I've had to be in communication with a guard, they've always been really kind and really nice. And I have four older brothers, and they would have had the same kind of attitude to that as well. So I don't know. It that kind of shocked me with this. But I understand if they're actually like, this person did it, like all of the evidence points to them. But they are pushing the evidence to point to these guys. Like, even with getting the guy that Martin said, oh, Dick hit her with the car accidentally, and then they put her in a car to get rid of the body. Like, they also followed that up by saying there was no evidence on the car that the car had been in like any sort of accident. And then with the story that Marty gave, where Marty, when he was pressured into giving a story, he said she was going to shout for help, or she was trying to get out of the car, and to stop her, I think Martin smacked her head up against the window and then she just went limp. That was his story. But there was no evidence of that in the car. Like, you can't just smack someone's head and like have no evidence. Like, it.
Well, and you contrast that with, so yeah, there was no evidence of the car hitting anyone. There was no evidence, they said also, of like a body being transported in mm-hmm. the trunk or the boot. But then you contrast that with the like vengeance killing of Marty, right? Where you've got, so it's the two Linsky brothers and then one of their friends, I think, if I'm remembering mm-hmm. correctly. And they pick up Marty. They basically, well, we don't know exactly what happened, but it seems like they suffocated him or beat him to death. You know, carried him around in their car. He tried to get out. He tried to get help. And then they just dumped his body near where Una's body was found. Mm-hmm. And they had, what, a shotgun, a penknife, and a bread knife with them, and basically nothing happens to them, right? Like,
yeah,
which
that
is bizarre.
And like the police, like they arrived home and the police were there. Like the police, like, did they check the car to see if there was any evidence of?
Yeah, I mean there were witnesses, right? And it's not like they denied taking him. They just claimed that they didn't kill him.
Yeah.
Which I don't. Like,
and then eventually that it was an accidental killing. Yeah, you go out with a shotgun, a bread knife, and whatever the other one was, and you're like, yeah, that's like, what?
I also,
it just seems,
yeah.
Go on.
The bread knife. I like, that's such a bizarre and gruesome choice. I think, like, I understand having a pen knife on you, like, that's, I feel like that's a relatively normal thing. I even can understand having like a gun in your car. You live in farm country. There's like maybe cause for that. But yeah, the bread knife, there's really no justification to have basically a saw.
Well, there was one thing they were trying to saw off that night.
Yeah, that that gets to some of the gruesomeness.
The gruesome. This. Yeah, that was the, yeah.
Yeah, the like partial castration of Marty. possibly after he was dead.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
But obviously that's what was in their minds if they're bringing out, like, you know, two different implements that might help them with it.
Right. I don't know how there isn't probable cause if, I mean, I don't know the law in Ireland, but I mean, from the description in the podcast, it sounds like they basically got excused for that.
Yeah. Which is wild. And like we can't take away, like, I don't think we can speak about that part without saying, like, it's unimaginable, like, going through that, knowing that your sister has been murdered in such a fashion. And I'm sure the grief and the anger that goes behind that is just really, like, unbearable and unthinkable. Obviously, it doesn't warrant what they did to Marty and even further so, because he was innocent. It wouldn't either way, I don't believe, but definitely not if he's innocent. And I suppose it's the anger that they felt that was, yeah, it's a lot. But it's as if the police were like, Grant, yeah, like, you should, nearly, like, fair right. play to you, as opposed to trying to pursue them. And, like, regardless of what happens to you, you have to uphold the law, like, especially for murder. Like, you can't, I don't know. That was really hard. I really didn't expect that pivot. In the episode, it was just the description of him and how him on his scooter coming home from work and going to work with his packed lunch and everything. Like, he was just such, like, just a young guy. I don't know.
Well, then the description of him at the funeral, right, in his coffin, there was talk about his hands and how, I guess they were, what is it, they were not visible, which, I mean, that was kind of heartbreaking. Yeah. To hear. There were a fair number of these moments, I think, where it was this mixture of both, just, like, I kept reminding myself how young a lot of these people were, right? Like, a lot of these people were, like, 19, 20 years old, and on both sides of it, right? And they're just, like, impossibly young to be involved in these two murders and just all of this violence. I mean, even before that, I think the description of Dick and Marty and Martin when they come back from being interrogated, and just how, I mean, they had been tortured, basically, yeah. right? Like, for hours and hours. And I mean, the way they're described is, I mean, it was pretty chilling. I think it, like, how you don't, how you see that and don't immediately turn around on the police and say, like, how is this possible? Like, how does this happen? And how do you, I mean, I think back to things like, I remember when, what was the show, 24, right? With, like, where it was all around these, like, getting confessions through torture. And I mean, that was a big thing in, like, the early 2000s of, like, can you trust anything anyone says when they've been tortured?
Yeah.
Let alone, like, how reliable are witnesses, right? Like, I think this is something I think about a lot. Like, I know there's, like, science around this about how people are really terrible at remembering any details, and witness accounts are super unreliable. I remember this happened to me once when I witnessed a crime of a bike getting stolen, and then this guy pulled a knife on one of my neighbors. Oh my and gosh. Yeah, and I was standing right there when it happened, and this was a couple of years ago. And when the police came afterwards and they asked me to describe just what the guy was wearing, and, like, no recollection. Like, I was standing next to this guy for a bit. I remember that he had a knife. I remember the action of what he did. I couldn't picture him. And it had happened 15 minutes before. And it just, maybe that's my own bad memory, but I think, like, to ask some of these people to remember what exact time it was that they saw somebody drive by, or when they got off the bus, or, you know, like, this whole, like, it happened at 6:53 and all that, like, that, the specificity of it
Yeah, especially like before, like digital clocks. Like we're all working off analog.
That's a good
here.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That seemed just bizarre. The whole thing circles back to like the lazy policing, because if the police had done their job at the start, these three lads would never have been pinpointed. And then Marty likely would never have, you know, the Linskys would never have been putting their blame on Marty, and he would never have been killed. And like, you know, there's such a knock on impact of this just really lazy policing. And it beggars belief, because surely if you're like a policeman and you're, or a police person, and you're going into a crime and you're like, Dick had given a partial license plate, three letters, three numbers, there was a J and it likely ended in 00. It was either a Zodiac or a Zephyr. It was new because it was like, you could barely hear it going by. And that it was, they had some like business type of receipts in the car. And then you had like an eyewitness, like someone who saw, like if Paul Rick Gahan wanted anything, that's Una's cousin, he would have wanted to find the killer. If it was Dick Donnelly or Martin or Marty, he would have said it was them. Like he had no agenda here.
Right.
Whereas it was just so frustrating. That's what was so frustrating, is that knock-on impact of it, like really, really frustrating.
Well, even just the cars, right? Like, so it's the Zodiac or the Zephyr, and Dick's car was the old beat-up Zephyr, mm-hmm. and which you'd hear coming. Mm-hmm. It was so noisy.
The exhaust hanging on the ground.
Right. And I mean, the description of it was like in like such a contrast to the Zodiac that... Like, how many Zodiacs with that on the license plate could there have possibly been in that rural area? Yeah, that they, I mean, and maybe it's true that the police looked for it. Like, maybe they looked for it. It didn't go anywhere. Like, we don't know that part of the story, right? Like, we don't hear their part.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. Like, maybe that's the frustrating thing as well about the podcast. Not frustrating, but I think at the start I had said like how it left me wanting, and that was definitely one thing I wanted. Like I wanted to hear more about that. But they've reopened the case fully, so I don't
know. They've reopened the case, but also, and this is something that gets talked about in the last episode, where we get into like going back to the files that were lost or destroyed, right? Like it was like 2/3 of the witness files. These ones that were like kept in black bags in a women's bathroom and then got tossed either intentionally or accidentally because they thought they were trash. So like I wrote it down as 266 of 371 files are just gone. So all of that work, however helpful it could have been, and now it's been over 50 years. So, you know, most of the witnesses gone or unreliable at this point. I mean, it's been so much time. I appreciate that they have started working on this case again, both investigating Una's murder, but also Marty's murder, which I feel like we know what happened there. It's just a matter of like there being justice.
Mm.
But I mean, what are the odds at this point that this ever gets solved? Like this is the coldest of cold cases, right?
Yeah. I mean, likely even like if it's a middle-aged man, that Tucker, like he's not still knocking about, I'd imagine.
Right.
Yeah. That part of it's very frustrating. I think, what was your thoughts on, like, I know we've discussed how the pivot kind of went to like more on the accused, very much on Martin, into like his day-to-day life in prison for a little while, him drawing his pictures and like leaving them on the wall, you know, coming out to the same community and then eventually finding love and having his son. And that's kind of what pushed him to get cleared and to get that apology. What was your feeling on like that side of the podcast? Like how it pivoted very much to him, like in the aftermath of even, you know, going into jail or to prison and coming back out, etc.
And I thought it changed from this sort of cold case murder, this mystery about this young woman, to just I feel like a very sad story about this man who sort of, you know, just did the best he could. He was so young when this happened. Mm. He went to prison for, what, 3 years, got out early. Like, he was a model prisoner. He just sort of, like, he seemed to sort of accept his fate, even though his fate was so unjust. And then, yeah, the decades just kind of go by. And I don't know, it was the, what was it? It was not just a combination. It was his son was born. And that was the same time. There's the thing with the, Jerry Conlon.
Oh, happened. Yeah, the Guilford Four.
Right, which, it's funny. I only knew, of, like, I remember that movie, In the Name of the Father.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that movie?
Yeah.
Was it Daniel Day-Lewis, I think? And
yeah.
I forget who else. And then laws changed, right? Like, it, mm-hmm. he couldn't have gotten exonerated.
It was past earlier. The time or something. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But then I feel like this gets mentioned, but I feel like it sort of gets mentioned quickly of, like, so that happened in 1989. His son was born in 1989, but it's still a couple decades before mm-hmm. this gets resolved, before he gets his conviction overturned, and then it's years before he gets the apology. And I don't think he's even gotten the compensation yet, right? Like, I think that is still unresolved.
I don't think so. I think that's still unresolved, yeah.
Right.
He did get the apology from the Garda commissioner.
Right. But he's lived so much of his life. And I think I feel like he, in this podcast, he is the central character, right? Like, he is the mm-hmm. central figure. And, I mean, he seems like just a guy who was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And just trying to hang out with his friends on, like, a Tuesday night in 1971. And I don't know, one of my criticisms of, and this is a mild criticism of the format of the show, is it gets a little, like, the narration gets a little bit dramatic at times. There's a lot of
never be the same again.
That gets said, I think, in every episode at least once. But it's also true, right? Like, it's, I mean, there's a couple of events that really just change a lot of people's lives.
Mm.
I don't know. I found myself in that last episode just very emotionally attached to Martin and really wanting him to get justice. And, you know, I was really happy for him. I wish it had happened in the 70s. That would have been nice.
I can't imagine what it's like, you know, being wrongly accused, going to prison, but knowing you actually did nothing wrong. Like, I can't. Yeah. Yeah. It's really wild. Like, that's the thing as well with this podcast. Like, I really enjoyed hearing from his side, and, like, it was a really interesting listen. Kind of very different to anything I've listened to maybe before, which I didn't expect after listening to episode one, but it still doesn't feel like it's the Una Linsky murder.
Right. I think that's actually a good point that you made, though, before that, of the Una Linsky murder feels maybe more like a story we've heard before, right? Like, it's a cold case murder of a young woman and these mysterious circumstances, but the Martin story, what this really is about, that seems unusual to me. Mm. And I think it's well told. Like, I think it's, I mean, to the thing we talked about at the beginning, it moves along so quickly. You get a lot of events happening. I mean, it covers decades and decades in the span of a couple of hours total. Like, mm-hmm. the whole season is maybe, what, 2.5 hours or so?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah, 2.5, 3 hours, yeah. Because the last one's like 50 minutes or something.
Yeah, yeah. So, and really, I mean, it, like, Una really only is a factor in the first episode, and then there's a little bit about when her body gets discovered. But then, I mean, her family is basically gone.
I wonder, I'd love to know, like, about the planning of it. Like, was the plan originally to look into Una Linsky's murder? But there was, like, maybe her family didn't want to be part of it. Maybe they couldn't get more information about her. Maybe there was no more to, like, find about it. And so it brought the producers of the podcast or the researchers to Martin, and to, like, how interesting that aspect of the story was.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think about that sometimes with these shows where it's like, you know, we get the story of the people who are willing to talk to the show, right? Mm-hmm. Martin was very available.
Mm.
I mean, he's interviewed throughout, and I struggled with his accent in the beginning. You didn't at all. You understood mm-hmm. everything he said.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just him. Everyone else I was good with. Something about his voice.
I mean, he's what, like in his 70s now? Like, it's that kind of more muffled country accent. Yeah.
Okay. But I mean, all the other people from the same town, I was fine with. Something about his voice. Maybe it's just my Americanism. I don't know. I
don't know. I think like men of his age, like from there, like my dad is from, not close enough, but he's from Westmeath, which is the county west of Meath, County Meath. And like he would have that same. I think maybe it's to do with the depth of the voice. It just gets harder to understand. It's more muffled as they age. I don't know.
I will say, I also feel like you're saying County Meath, like with a TH, but
Meath.
Okay.
Westmeath is where my dad's from. County Meath is where this happened.
And I feel like you made fun of me for saying that name about the same way in the last episode.
No, you didn't say, you said Meath. I said Meath.
That, how is that different?
What? You said Meath at the end, and I'm saying Meath.
I don't remember spitting on my microphone.
I do.
Maybe. I don't think I did. Anyway, we were talking about Martin. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that also, one other thing I wanted to mention was, I thought one of the great things I liked about this show was that we had the extra resources on the website, the map, the family tree. Like, I was looking at that family tree. I mean, we talked about this before, how there were, what, the 24 or 23 children between the two households. And I mean, that really helped me, especially with just all these people talking, right? There's so many people who were interviewing, especially in that first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was going back and looking, and it was such a great resource. I feel like more podcasts like this should have diagrams or like some version of that wall with the string connecting all mm-hmm. the dots for you as a visual reference, right? Because like, especially if you're listening while you're running, or like you're not like something to refer back to go as a reference point.
Yeah.
The map didn't make as much sense to me. Like, I went and actually looked at the like Google Maps to see like, okay, where are these? Where is this town in like Ireland? And that wasn't as helpful to me, but the family tree was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I didn't find, I thought the map was interesting just to see the layout and how close things were. I think there was an added image of where Una's body was found. I was interested in that because it's so close to where I grew up, or where we live back in Ireland. Only like 15 minutes away, up in Tobraddon. Great pub up there, Johnny Fox's pub. But even the map, like the screenshot nearly of that map wasn't great. But yeah, definitely the family tree was really helpful. And I was like reverting back to that, even figuring out just the who's who. But I also wanted to ask you how gas you thought, or how funny you thought it was. I thought it was a real Irish thing when two of the accused, one of them ends up with the other one's sister. So Marty's sister marries Dick Donnelly. And I was like, that's the most Irish thing ever.
Well, and she only met him that night when he came back from being interrogated, right? Like, she didn't know him.
Yeah.
That... I mean, I just kind of chalk that up to, it's a small town. There's only so many people you can meet.
Yeah.
Maybe a little trauma bonding. I don't know.
Trauma bonding, maybe. Yeah.
But, yeah.
It was sad that he died before he got the conviction overturned.
Yeah. 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 So let's see. I feel like we've talked about most of the elements of the story. Is there anything else we didn't touch on?
I don't think so. I wonder, there was something I was going to ask you, which was like, how do you feel like the podcast did being, obviously with any murder case, any crime, you really have to be respectful of the victim's loved ones, be it the victim in this case, Una Linsky, or the wrongly accused as well. You just, it's a really fine line that you're trying to draw here. And I wonder how you felt like, was the podcast respectful to the victim's loved ones?
I think it was. I think, none of the immediate members of Una Linsky's family were interviewed. Is that right?
No, none of them.
Only the cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or, yeah. Which is interesting. Like, I wonder if they were approached and refused to participate.
That's what my gut says.
I also feel like, this is something I was wondering early on in maybe like episode 2 or 3. If you're part of Una Linsky's family, like, how would you feel about this focus on Martin? Like, would you feel like Una is just sort of on the periphery?
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, how would you feel if you're, like, how would you feel about what the police did, right? Like, I feel like if I'm one of her siblings, and I don't know how they feel, but I'd be curious how they feel about the fact that the police botched this so badly. Yeah. And like, there's somebody out there, or there was somebody out there who murdered this young woman. And, you know, not only do we not have any idea who it was, but we don't even, like, what was their motive, right? Like, what, we know so little about what happened to her. And I feel like that didn't really get touched on. And I feel like that I would want that too. Because I feel like I got to the end of this and my main takeaway was more about the sort of injustices that happened. Like, that's the main theme to me.
Yeah. The injustice. And for me, definitely is the frustration that comes with the guards that I've mentioned. It's just so lazy. There was no, I definitely thought after episode 1 that there was going to be some more like insight, maybe a little bit of probing into the boyfriend. Like,
oh, yeah.
I know, like, someone went into him more or less straight away and said she never came home, and he runs out the door and joins the search party. But that's more or less the last we heard of him.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? He just disappears.
Mm-hmm. Nothing is said about him. Doesn't seem, I'm sure you'd hope that they like questioned him and stuff. But like, given that, like, he, because in the episode 1, it talks about him having a really nice car and like he had a really good job. Like, even if it wasn't him, could it have been a connection of his? It was never discussed.
Do you think, though? So, okay. So I feel like I have heard other podcasts that spend a lot more time exploring like every avenue, and maybe those were dead ends. And I wonder if maybe like we're better off with this being just a more succinct story, told a little bit more efficiently. And it's only when you really sort of go back and pore over it that you realize, oh yeah, there were a couple of things that were sort of loose ends that never got followed up on.
Well, I suppose the point of, it seems like the point of this podcast wasn't to dig into what happened to her. It was to dig into what happened after she was murdered. Because it doesn't appear that there was any dig into trying to find out like more facts than Martin was able to give or Paul was able to give. It seems to just be the story of Una Linsky, and like, let's tell the day she got murdered and the aftermath as it happened to these 3 lads. And that's it. Like, it's not a case that we see in some other types of podcasts where they're going around interviewing people hoping to find, you know, what do they call it? The golden nugget or whatever. That's like going to lead them there. Like, it wasn't like an investigative podcast. It was more like just telling the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Stepping back from it, how satisfying is that? Like, is that something you want in a story like this?
It's just different. ideally, I like when there's like investigation to it, but sometimes I feel like, you know, investigative podcasts can really go down a rabbit hole and they don't really lead anywhere and it can be tangly and a lot of unnecessary information, et cetera, et cetera. But so like I still enjoyed listening to the podcast. I would recommend people to listen to it. But again, I go back to the saying I've said it a few times now, which is I've been left wanting to know more about there's such major holes in the story that we didn't get an insight into. But I think that'll be for a different podcast. I think someone else is going to pick up this story and they're going to go through it and they're going to do the more investigative side of it and try to figure out.
Yeah, I might disagree with you a little bit. I think I have listened to other true crime stories where the framing of the story is more around, and this has been a while since I've listened to it, but like the serial problem of like, as a host, I'm going to ask a bunch of questions that I don't have the answers to and they're never going to get resolved, but I'm just going to keep like throwing questions out, and they're interesting questions and it keeps me engaged, but at the end, like, I'm sort of overwhelmed with the unknown or the possibilities, right? Like, you know, this could have been the way it went, or that could have been the way it went. We don't know, but let's sort of drag this out over a whole season of content. And this one was much more factual, right? Like, it was much more, let's report on what happened. Let's report on what we do know for sure. It did definitely present, like, we make what I feel like is a fair presumption that Martin and Dick and Marty were not involved, right? Like, that seems to be the clear statement that it makes. And so let's follow along with what happened to Martin. How did his conviction get overturned? Like, all of those bits and pieces that are all sort of like news and less so about speculation. And maybe that's what would have happened if it was more focused on Una, was it would just have been a bunch of speculation without any resolution.
Yeah, I get that. I think even like one episode, like having a sixth episode wouldn't have been too much. Like, if there was one episode dedicated to the fact of like, these are the lines of inquiry that were looked into, or like upon research, like these are some potential like things that may have happened, but like, you know, nobody ever followed through with them, whatever. I just feel like there were so many questions like that I'm still left wanting. And I do understand what you mean. It can really rabbit hole down. You can get like flustered with the amount of like unknowns that there is. But in this case, it just felt like some of them could have been given.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a balancing act. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I say that having, like, I feel like recently I've listened to several full seasons of shows that where we end up with, and still the crime is unsolved. And I know that's part of how this one ends too, but I feel like I did get a whole story. I got Martin's whole story. I know his whole arc, and like that reached a resolution point that was satisfying.
Yeah. And I suppose isn't that the point of a podcast or any storytelling, is to like get you to connect with a character or like feel emotion, feel empathy for a character and see their story play out. Again, I just go back to the fact that I don't think this is inside the crime for Una Linsky. It seems to be more like inside the accused of, you know, what happened in the aftermath of the Una Linsky murder, which is just a kind of a different like point of view than what I thought was going to happen after episode one.
Do you want to draft a strongly worded letter to talk and say, no, we think your show is misnamed?
I thought it was really good. And like, I'm actually, we've obviously listened to two seasons now of Inside the Crime. I'm really intrigued to listen to the third one, or the second one.
To be clear, we listened to season one.
We listened to season three. And I would like to listen to season two, because I feel like season one and season three were very different from each other, and also like had really interesting elements to them. So I'm going to have to put season two on my list.
Do you one thing we didn't talk about is just the overall like production of the show. We talked a little bit about the narration, but like, did you feel like some shows, I think the music or the sound effects or the like all of that gets in kind of the way. How did you feel about that here?
I thought it was actually fine here. I think there was a few small additional like sound effects. I always think sound effects in a podcast kind of make it sound really like amateurish or something. It sounds like, I don't know, my son or daughter pressing buttons like to give a background noise, or I don't know what it sounds like. I'm not into it, but I didn't think they overdid it here. I think there was a few. I don't know that the sounds added to the story. I never think they do, but I thought it was okay. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was on that line. I think it was okay. I think it wasn't too much. It's hard because I recently watched Killers of the Flower Moon, which has a scene of like an old-timey radio show where you're seeing the behind the scenes of how they do all the sound effects. They're basically telling a true crime story, and you see how they do like all of the sort of ridiculous things to make the sound effects for the show. And I always just picture like this room full of people with weird toys and gizmos just to make these noises to sound sort of hammy on the show. And I don't think this one crossed the line, but it was definitely, there were a couple of points where it stood out. It's like, oh yeah, they're really like heightening the drama or trying to heighten the drama by playing the suspenseful music or sweeping music. And it gets a little loud, but I think overall it was good. I think it was well produced. My only real critique, and again, I think this is relatively minor, was I think the drama of the narration got a little much at times. Mm. But to be fair, I mean, it's a pretty dramatic story, right? Like there is a lot of drama inherent in the story.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, so are you gonna, like, how would you rate it? Are you gonna recommend it? Would you recommend to a friend?
I would definitely recommend this. I think the main things I would recommend about it are, I think it's just it's an unusual story. It's an interesting story. It takes this pivot, which is unexpected. And I don't know, I think I'm also sort of a sucker for like an injustice story, and like that redemption story of someone who was falsely accused. I think that's compelling. In a way, I think that's sometimes more compelling than just a straight up murder mystery.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say it's more compelling than a straight up murder mystery, but I would definitely say that I agree. I would definitely recommend it. I've already started to recommend it to people. It's really interesting. I would just, you know, kind of disclaimer by saying like it's not what you expect. Even after episode one, the rest of it isn't what you expect, but I still think it's really interesting. So yeah, that's all right. It for our first full review. Crime question of the episode, Jeff. Do you read the titles of later episodes? Do you look for spoilers?
No, I actually don't try. I try not to read any episode titles even as I'm listening to it. Like this one, I basically queued up in my queue. And I just kind of let it play from episode to episode. And I thought that was great. I dislike kind of being like getting that direction before. I like just following the story and getting kind of sucked in. How about you?
Absolutely agree. Like, I do not understand people who like, there, do you know there's people out there who like before they watch a movie, they'll like Google what happens at the end so they're not surprised by it? Or like read the last few pages of a book. I'm just like, what? Like, how? No, I just, it's not for me. No thanks. If I look at the title of the episodes, it's purely because I did it accidentally. Sometimes Spotify puts them like in like the backwards order, Like,
yes, I hate
the
that.
Backwards order. What yeah. a, like, what a phrase. When you go into it and it's like episode 6 is there. And I'm like, yeah, but I haven't listened to episode 1. I want to go down to episode 1 first. The backwards order. Yeah.
Well, and sometimes when there's like bonus episodes or like a follow-up episode, they'll be kind of all interspersed with a different season's episodes. And I'm trying to make sense of what belongs to what show. And you've got the little like one or two sentence description. And so I start to read that and I realize I'm actually reading about the end of the story that I haven't listened to the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
And like that sucks all the drama out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I will say when my kids were younger, there was a period where we were watching a lot of movies and sometimes we'd be watching movies I hadn't seen. And I would go on IMDb or one of the like parenting sites to find out, okay, what am I going to sit in a room and watch with my children? How much, what is the violence that we're going to watch? What is the sex in this? And which often meant that I would know exactly everything that happens in the movie. And that was...
I mean, that's coming from a different guise. That's not because you want to ruin it. That's like, when do I have to leave the room? Is this actually okay to watch? Like,
right.
Yeah.
But it killed me every time to be like, okay, I know exactly what's going to happen in this
movie.
But
there was a greater good going for that one. Do you know
was
what I mean?
There?
But like, you're not
just... Those are teachable moments with...
Mm.
Maybe.
I mean, it depends on the vibes. Like, if it's a Saturday afternoon or a Saturday evening, you're like, I don't want to teach. I just want to be entertained. I don't want to have to have this conversation right now.
I will say I've, like, stumbled across, like, there will be articles that pop in my news feed about, oh, like, this version of this action figure came out for this Marvel movie, which indicates that this happens in the story, or, like, the soundtrack listing comes out for like the score of a movie and the titles of the tracks on the score basically give away the plot of the movie. And I get that that's just content that gets out there and gets clicks, but like to what end? Like just go enjoy a story. That's, I don't know. Maybe I'm too opinionated about that, but I think the same thing is true of these podcasts. Like I think the episode titles of most of these shows guide you more than you need, and it's fine to just, because like actually like episode 2 of this one was about the car and like that was I saw that one and I thought, oh yeah, I don't need to look at the episode titles of this, like I can just, I'll just listen and be entertained as I go.
On the next episode of So Much Crime, So Little Time, we head to America for our next podcast.
It's just after Christmas, 2011. Russ Faria comes home to find his wife, Betsy, dead. He gets charged and convicted of a murder. Seems simple? It's not. This story is going to get weird. We're going to do a primer episode on the Dateline podcast, The Thing About Pam. So we'll do this preview episode to start. It's a spoiler-free episode to help you decide if you want to commit to listening with us. And we want to note that this was originally a Dateline report on the TV show, and then it was a podcast, and then it was a TV show with Renee Zellweger. We're going to focus just on the podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts.
So Much Crime, So Little Time is a production of MimeGov Media. The executive producer is Paxton Calariso. Our associate producer is Blythe Tai. Theme music was composed by Vyacheslav Starostin. If you haven't done it yet, please subscribe to this show in your podcast app. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating and a review. Even better, tell your friends. To join the discussion, look for us on social media. Check out the show notes for all the links. Thanks for listening.